Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 10th August 2021 Tuesday class. We will be continuing from this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning. Teachings from the adapted verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. We are at page 355. Just relax body and mind, and we shall off the light, and you can have our half an hour of awareness based meditation. So just relax, completely relax, be at ease, then silence everything, maintain awareness so that the mundane mind will slow down. Then you can finally realize your true mind. Then silence everything and stay there. Allow the silent mind to continue. This stability of awareness is very important. Unless you have that stability of awareness to be aware, you can never understand what your true mind is. To understand what really that true mind is, all thinking must stop. And how can it stop? It can only stop when there is understanding, when you don't try to know, don't try to do anything, when you don't try to arise any thought process, just let things be. Whatever arise, allow it to be. So that all this activity or movement of sankhara, they can slow down and finally cease. Then the awareness is only aware of certain vibration or your heartbeat or whatever object of meditation that you may have or used to, or wherever your mind is located. The awareness will be there. Let it be. If you can detect anything, stay there until the thing becomes very subtle, very quiet, and still. Everything will return to its original state before stirring. That is your true mind. That is your silent mind. So silence everything and just allow it to be, to realize that inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, the true mind, which is the meditative mind. And this mind is silent without any activity of thought or movement. But the arising of thought and movement is very near, very fast from that nature it arises. So unless you are really stable in the ability to be aware, you cannot see, you cannot understand. And most people fail to comprehend that they have two minds. They only know they think a lot. They believe they have only one mind. When thought process stop, find out, is there anything else? When there is no more thinking, what is that? You have to silence to understand. So I will let you meditate on your own. Then I will set the alarm for 30 minutes. Then after that, you can continue with your awareness-based meditation. Remember the four supports. Relax into every mind state that arises. Don't try to know, don't try to think, don't do anything. Just aware, silent. Maintain the awareness for as long as you can. Then trust that nature to move around. And use the awareness nature to develop the meditative understanding of what is going on within the form and mind, the environment, externally, internally. Then through that observation, silent observation, You will awaken. You will develop all the understanding. You will come to understand clearly. Who are you? What are you? What is this form of mind all about? What is this so-called human being all about? Then you will be very clear about the mundane mind and the true mind again. The miserly and greedy develop a heart of giving. The arrogant must develop a heart of upholding precept. So this one we have gone through. We will go through the commentaries and see what they are discussing. How do we enable those who are miserly and greedy to practice giving or dhanaparami? Often the wealthier people are, the less inclined they are to give. Those who are miserly and greedy think, I earn this money, so I deserve to enjoy it. I don't want to give my money to other people. I remember when Suji first launched the mission of charity, those 30 housewives responding to my call to put aside money for charity deposited 50 cents of their grocery money every day into the bamboo bank. Small contribution, like they are slowly accumulate, which has allowed our mission of charity to grow to the scale it is today. So a lot of wholesome thing or beautiful project, they arise from humble beginning, very simple beginning. So this act of charity is a very beautiful example. When they started, actually Taiwan money is very small. So 50 cents of Taiwan money is really small. And they are the savings from their grocery money. It's your budget for the day to buy grocery or whatever food for your family. In the early days, I remember my mother has to manage the same thing. My father will give her $2 at that time, under the British, $2. We now we call it ringgit. And we have a family of 9, plus my father, my mom, and my grandmother. We got a family of 12. And we need to survive with $2. So that was her budget. And yet, she managed to save some money. That was the magical thing of her. She worked very hard. She very thrifty. Or very frugal in managing grocery budget. It's because she understand the value of money and how difficult it is to actually have enough money to meet household and to feed so many people. Well, both my dad and my mom, they are simple, uneducated people, but they did their duty very well, and they really, really sacrificed a lot of their life just to bring us up and provide us with all the basic needs, education, and whatever. So this is what parents are for, the motherly love, the fatherly love, and the sacrifice they are willing to set forth for their children. So thinking back, all this that Suji did was in fact very, very praiseworthy. I never knew such project can happen. And they are all housewives, started with 30 housewives. Can we read on? We finish this part. Okay, small contribution like they are slowly accumulate. which has allowed our mission of charity to grow to the scale it is today. And today, city is very big. And now they have a lot of funds because they have a lot of supporters, members, and volunteers who voluntarily pledge their money, offering and donation, and some they donate generously whenever there is a need. Even our Kaya Mita funds, our Kaya Mita, many of them donated to Chi. Just as an organization, they really did a lot of wholesome things. With their limited resources, this housewife was still able to collectively do many good deeds, all without affecting the way their family live. When they went to the market with their grocery basket, they would say to the vendor, "Give me a little bit less today." Then the vendor asked, "Why?" "I need to save 50 cents." "What are you going to do with 50 cents?" "Yeah, at that time, Taiwanese 50 cents is really very small. If I'm not wrong, maybe it's equivalent to a Malaysian 5 cents, I think. 5 cents. "I'm going to help people." Once the vendor heard that even 50 cents can help people and realized that they could also afford to donate 50 cents a day, they helped to spread the news. This was how the spirit of the bamboo bank began in the market. Although 50 cents is a small amount, by collecting this small contribution from everyone, we can gather them together to manifest the power of love. This is like planting a seed. By taking care of it every day, this seed will grow into a big tree. This sturdy housewife encourage each other, and sustain the initial resolve. This was the origin of Tsuchi Commissioners. This shows how a single seed of goodness can gradually grow into great vows and great aspiration. Yeah, a lot of great things they manifest or started with humble beginning, very simple idea from sincere people. When I was young, I used to reflect and contemplate the world has a lot of problem, situation and misery. Then I saw this happen in my school. That's why we were able to have so much joy. There were two classmates. They were Indian origin classmates. They were from very poor family and background. And we didn't know. The whole school didn't know. Until the teacher decided to find out why these two Indian students are always late for class. Then when they arrive, they don't wear shoes. They don't have proper uniform. They don't have textbook. They don't have basic things. Then the teacher actually find out more and realized their condition was so bad. So the teacher visited their village or their home place. It was very far, very remote. And early morning, these two have to help their parents, their mother, to do a lot of things before they can really have the time to walk to school. And because it was far, then they don't have the money and all those things. So they told the teacher, they have no choice. Sometimes they have to give up schooling because of the condition. But these two classmates, they were very unique. They actually love school. They see the classmates, they were very happy, very cheerful, able to be in the school, having classmates, friends. But the only thing is poverty was so harsh. A lot of things they can't afford and have, even pocket money, there was none. So the teacher, out of love, compassion, tried to help. But the teacher also have limited resources because alone she can't do anything or do much. How much can you help? How long can you help? So the teacher was very wise. One day, he waited for these two students to arrive. Then he called all the class, the classmates, to listen to their story. Then the teacher suggested, can we all help them? So, because my school was one of the best English school in Allostown at that time, and some of the family quite okay, quite well to do. Even my father considered one of the better off ones. Yeah, we have pocket money and all my things are there for schooling. I have everything to pay fees, to buy textbook, to buy uniform, even whatever I need. So the teacher suggests those who can afford, you want to donate, any amount will do. I still remember, it was really emotional and full of joy. Finally, we collected, our class got 40 over students. We collected almost 50 cents. 50 cents is a lot of money at that time. My pocket money was only 10 cents. So those who have money, they donated money. Those who don't have money, they say, can you ask your parents to help buy their shoes, their socks, and textbook, pencil, everything, and offer to them. So that's how these two students was able to join us. And finally, they graduated too, and they became good citizens of the country. And they also contributed in their own way. So this was the story that actually helped me to understand that together as a group, we can do marvelous things. Then later on, like I shared with you early on, there was a medical student who also due to poverty cannot afford fees, and the university threatened to bar him from exam because he couldn't pay the fees and he defaulted so many times. Then that time I already working. I had the means, the resources, and I want more people to participate. As I started by getting my Kayamita at that time to start the ball rolling, then later on get the donation in from some close friend, my brothers, my sister, and we raise through numbers, and we managed to raise that time quite significant amount of money. Yeah, his fee, medical fee, was about 50,000 a year. And I think in total we raised about maybe close to 100 plus thousand. Of course, over two or three occasions. And that's how I saw if we can really come together, yeah, as a group of charity people. That's how I started the Kayamita Fund. And wherever we can do wholesomeness video, then if you look at the mats behind, it's really beautiful. Let's say we have maybe our country 35 million citizens. Do you know donating 1 ringgit each? Nowadays the 1 ringgit is maybe like last time 5 cents or 10 cents. Yeah, depreciation and all things. Even 1 ringgit each, you can receive 35 million. And 35 million even nowadays, you can do a lot of things. So the power of generosity through numbers is something I realized can be very helpful. So this is the little sharing that I want to share so that we understand how Ciji has the ability to do all this. So all this beautiful idea or example can maybe help people to have that type of mindset that enable them to start all these beautiful charity projects. And we can also witness through this pandemic, there are a lot of very helpful, genuine, sincere, generous people who are ever willing to help. And most of these people, they know what hardship is. They know how is it to be without food, without the means to support the family. A lot have taken the suicide away. So there is a lot of suffering within pandemic, within crisis. It can be economic crisis, financial crisis, or whatever crisis. Sometimes it's due to civil war. Sometimes it's due to maybe religious war and conflict. And there are other calamities too, like earthquake, tsunami, flood. Nowadays, forest fire is quite common. Even in Greece, recently, one of the whole island, the pine tree got burned. And many other examples we can see, even the great flood in China. The recent one also quite bad. And in US, in various parts of the world, you can witness a lot of this bushfire leading to forest fire and volcanic eruption activity and many other crises or calamity that can behold humanity. So these are all the examples you can recall to mind and reflect upon them. Then we will have this conscience that is ever like have that intent to help when we have the means. So all this are part and parcel of humanity, human conscience, human nature. Of course, it has to do with a spiritual understanding and activity. But certain people are by nature very compassionate, loving, helpful, kind, generous. They have it in them. That's why they inherited them from their past. So these are the people who will go all out and do all this type of thing. So there are many. Okay, we continue our sharing so that we can cover more. Today, although Ciji's mission of charity has expanded globally, we still promote the same simple principle, the spirit of the bamboo man. This is how we educate the rich to help the poor. And this one is a very good concept because the rich have the resources and the means. So if they can be educated to do their part, they can play a great role. And through this, there is synergy. Synergy in the sense that the rich can make use of their wealth for good purpose, for good charity projects, then the poor who receive them receive a lot of gratitude and joy, then they will be motivated in the future to help others because they have gone through that type of life. Then seeing how people generously make offering and help them, they will be touched, their gratitude, their joy, you can see them. And this is what all this charitable project is all about. It can help change human consciousness, give rise to joy, give rise to understanding, and give rise to gratitude, respect, kindness, generosity, all this. These are all very wholesome. So it all started with the simple concept of a bamboo bank from 30 housewives. So this is really amazing. So when they educate the rich to help the poor, they teach the wealthy to develop loving heart to help those who are in need. This is also how they teach the poor to realize their riches. Doing good deeds is not a privilege of the wealthy. We also inspire the poor to do good deeds and thus enable them to experience the joy of giving. So sometimes it's not materialistic money that you can offer as generosity. Sometimes you can contribute in many other ways. You can contribute your effort, your whatever ability to contribute. So service is one of them. Then help out in whatever activity. Play your role, do your duty, then help to spread the word, have to be part of the community, the entity, or the volunteers. So all these are various ways of giving. Then you can also radiate your kind thought, give moral support. So all these are dhanaparami. Not necessary you must have money to do all this. So the act of goodness can come from the heart, and the heart doesn't have money, but you must have virtue, you must have kindness, goodness, you must have sincerity, joy, and willing to help. I realized when I was young, I had this very strong virtue in me. I like to help out. Even family that I don't know, I saw them doing things, I will go and help. Chop firewood, saw firewood, and all that thing. And sometimes Gotong Royong, I will go and help. Then within the village, the community, there is a lot of get together to do wholesome charity work. Sometimes to help repair certain things that were damaged and all those things. And sometimes, like, there's a fire. We need people to help put out the fire. Then you can also help out when they change their roof. Well, last time my village, the roof are at that roof. And every family, after 5 years or 8 years maximum, you have to change your roof, otherwise it leak. So I remember the joy of changing roof. Well, I did my family one first, and I tried so many things. It was not easy, very dirty and all that, but we had the joy. Then we saw this Gotong Royong. Yes, when your turn come, people come and help. When their turn, you go and help. So that's how we saw all this. And since young, I had a lot of joy doing all this, helping people in whatever way, whatever form. Then I saw how they, our Chinese, we call it the clan association, clan, CLAN. And my father joined a lot of this association. We have our Hakka clan. Then apart from Hakka association, they also had the Liu Guan Zhang, the San Kuo Yan Yi, the Liu family, the Kuan Gong Kuan family. Liu is Liu Bei, then Zhang is Zhang Fei. So Liu Guan Zhang, the three surname, they also have their association. And this association, they are established based on the same concept to help overseas Chinese who migrated to Malaysia and all these things. So the members will start to like pay monthly contributions, small amount, but it's enough to collect, because as more and more people come to know, they will have a lot of gratitude. When you are new from China, when our parents came over, we are migrants and we don't know what is the culture and all those things. But this association is your refuge. You go there, they provide you free food. They help to stabilize your initial search for a place to live, a place to have shelter and all those things. Then they try to find job for you. Then you get to know more and more people. Then as the association grows, we do more charity work. We have prize money for student motivation, student who did well, then support the poor, raise fund for school, I remember. And they do a lot of other charitable this. Yeah, this association, through the numbers, the members, they are quite well established, and most of them able to buy some good assets. That's why this asset generate income. That time short lot was not cheap. But at that time, based on the value of money at that time, it was considered very cheap. Like my father bought the short lot for 200 ringgit only. But 200 ringgit at that time is very big. Well, 1 cent can buy things. And my elder brother used to tell me, you go to school, pocket money, 1 cent. Then my father's time, very tough. So all this, I saw and witnessed them as I grew up. Those are the 50s and the 60s. Then I went to school. Then 70s, 80s, I saw many other things. Then my father was very good. He exposed me to a lot of things, the banking all, but I helped him a lot. I help him a lot to manage the shop lot business and the banking thing and whatever. Yeah, he sent me to English school, so I help him to read the letters and all those things. Then later on, he liked me because he know I was very different and I was very good. That's why a lot of things my father consulted me, and I helped solve family problem, brother, sister's problem and whatever. Then have to advise me that and other issue within the family. Okay, we continue. Sorry, divert a bit. Okay, this is how we teach the poor to realize their riches. Doing good deeds is not a privilege of the wealthy. We also inspire poor to do good deeds and thus enable them to experience the joy of giving. Now, this is also very beautiful. To inspire everyone to give, the Buddha insists that he and his disciples should go from door to ask for almsround. We call it Pindapata in the Theravada tradition. But people who don't understand, they call it go begging. It's actually not begging. It's going for arms round. They are like giving you an opportunity to do charity, to offer them arms, because they are worthy of giving, worthy of respect, worthy of a few things because of their cultivation and all those things. So all this is what the Buddha calls synergy between the ladies and the Sangha. community. The Sangha community, are the orders of the monks. These are monks who renounce the world, cultivate, meditate, do a lot of spiritual cultivation and wholesomeness. Then, as a synergy, because their monks' precept is such, they cannot work. I mean, work in that sense, like have a 9-to-5 job, honestly, no. They do work full time and they have their precept. They cannot touch money and many other things. So the only way for them to survive is to have the good karma, to believe in their karmic nature. So that through synergy, they offer opportunity to laity to offer alms to them. So this tradition was very good. It was Sakyamuni Buddha's tradition. That's why they believe in renunciation, but not all Buddha go this tradition. But Sakyamuni realized this tradition through past civilization and all the things that he has gone through and seen when he was cultivating. He realized this tradition is the best way to preserve the sasana. The sasana can last for, it's supposed to be 5,000 years. If it's not for the Bhikkhuni order. That's why the Buddha chose this tradition, where this was their tradition. In fact, there was a conversation between Sariputta and Sakyamuni on this issue. I read somewhere, I forgot already. Then it was also mentioned, if you don't go this way, you go one way, what will happen and all those things. These are based on the Buddha's all-knowing understanding that he has when he looked through all the past Samasambuddha's lineage and all those things, and how this thing come about. And that's how he implemented all this through his understanding. So this is something very beautiful thing, beautiful too. So this same spirit is found in the bamboo bank and in the practice of Tsuchi commissioner personally visiting the homes of donating members to collect their monthly contribution. So because of all this synergy, they are willing to help out to let more and more people having the condition to do charity, to cultivate wholesomeness, to develop good karmic inheritance. So these are beautiful. All of these actions serve the purpose of helping ordinary people to eliminate or reduce their greed and attachment from their mind, and of enabling everyone to give joyfully with understanding, so that they can have this generosity. And when they see how they have contributed to help others, there is a type of joy. I had that type of joy before. That's why I really will move to tears. Even the two Indian classmates that we helped, there was so much joy when we realized that the small help from each and everyone. And that one was a money contribution. So that they have pocket money, they have support from us to help out in the family and all those things. And to realize that there was so much joy, and to understand that as a student we can do that, play that role, there was so much joy. That's why that was very vivid in my mind. Since that day, I was in Senate 2 only that time, I remember. Then until I grew up, that memory was always there. It was so vivid. That type of joy, because I reflected too, like what my daughter used to reflect, how blessed we are, how fortunate we are. We don't have to be in such situation. And since we have the means, to us, it doesn't affect me. Because once a month, I offer half my pocket money, 10 cents, I do it, 5 cents, I can afford, I do it. That's why later on, a lot of students do it. We are not every day you donate your pocket money. You only donate half of your pocket money for one day. And these are the money they collect to help students. So it was beautiful. I think the first month they collected quite a bit, much more than what they need. So because of that, the voluntary contribution and donation, it starts to like develop itself. And other classes, the teacher, the headmaster, very good, ask them to go and check any student that needs aids or help or not. They write to the social welfare department. They help them to apply for social benefit for their family. Then they also try to apply for, we call it government grants or aid for poor students. And later on, they receive free books and all those things. Because the state government also, when they came to know, they help out in their own way. So these are all very meaningful and very beautiful sharing. Okay, we read on a bit more. All of these actions serve the purpose of helping ordinary people to eliminate greed and attachment from their mind and of enabling everybody to give joyfully. We have covered this. This is how the miserly and greedy can also develop a heart of giving. Just as grains of rice can add up to a bushel, is it bushel or bushel? By bringing together everyone's effort, we can create great blessings in the world. So this is very true. Furthermore, we need to help the arrogant develop a heart of upholding precepts. Arrogant people are found everywhere. Wealthy people consider themselves rich. Intellectual consider themselves to be highly educated. And even those who are disabled, poor or ignorant, can have an inferiority complex. Therefore, arrogance exists in everyone's mind. They just may not be aware of it. So this is a very common phenomenon. Most people who don't have understanding tend to develop this attitude of arrogance. You tend to be very arrogant because you take for granted that you are better or you are more wealthy, you have all this other people don't have. Especially when we were young, because condition then were very poor. Whichever family that can afford to have a car to drive their children to school is considered a big shot. Most people walk to school, then later on cycle to school. That was the means at that time. There was no motorbike, hardly any. So that was the life during the 60s and the 70s. With arrogance in their mind, people will find it difficult to uphold precept because they are already in the habit of doing things as they please and living the undisciplined type of lifestyle. Therefore, they do not restrain themselves from smoking, drinking, chewing with nuts, gambling, etc., all of which create problems in family and in society. They also do not care if they get involved in interpersonal conflict. This behavior makes it difficult for them to abide by the precepts and behave morally. There is a story about this in the Buddhist teaching. In the society of the Buddha's time, there was a great disparity between the rich and the poor. Those who were rich were extremely wealthy, while those who were poor were very poor. There was a Brahmin who was intelligent and meticulous, and whose wealth rivaled that of some kingdoms. His whole life he had greatly detested people who beg instead of working hard to make a living. He thought that poor people were impoverished because they were unwilling to work to earn a living. He also did not respect the monastic who went out to ask for alms. One of the Buddha's disciples, Sariputta, who was considered the foremost in wisdom, often heard people talking about this Brahmin's habit, and he felt he had to transform him and help him develop wisdom. One day, the Brahmin went out to collect rent with his servant. On his route, he stopped to rest and prepare to take a meal. At that moment, Sariputta appeared before him, holding his empty alms bowl in both hands. This Brahmin was very unhappy, displeased, when he saw Sariputta. At first, he thought of hurling insult at the monk, but he changed his mind and simply did not speak. He just ate his meal and pretended not to see him, hoping that Sariputta would leave, but Sariputta did not move. After the Brahmin finished his meal, his servant placed a basin of water in front of him for him to wash his hand and rinse his mouth. Afterwards, he took that basin dirty water, poured it into Sariputta's bowl, and said, "This is what I sincerely want to give you." Unexpectedly, Sariputta did not get angry but smiled and blessed him. "I hope your sincere giving today will give you infinite blessing in your future life." So this pure wish was very fantastic. After Sariputta spoke, he turned and left. As the Brahmin watched Sariputta leave in a dignified manner, he thought of how Sariputta was unaffected by the insult and calmly gave his blessing. He worried that his reputation would be damaged because so many of his servants had witnessed this event, so he quickly sent servant after the monk, hoping to invite Sariputta to his house so that he could apologize face to face. Sariputta walked lightly and swiftly, and he quickly returned to the abbot. As soon as he returned to the abbot, he combined the bowl of dirty water with sand and soil and used it to even out the path the Buddha would walk every day. The Buddha saw him doing this and asked Sariputta, "What are you doing?" Sariputta truthfully described what he experienced when asking for alms from the Brahmin and said, "I hope this Brahmin can change his miserly way and eliminate his arrogance so he can benefit others and receive blessing." Hearing this, the Buddha praised Sariputta's ability to interact with people with impartial wisdom and generosity, and generously give the Dhamma to all. The Brahmin servant arrived just in time to see what Sariputta had done after returning to the abbot, and they heard his conversation with the Buddha. They were deeply touched and promptly went home to tell the Brahmin exactly what they had seen and heard. After the Brahmin heard what had happened, a sense of remorse arose in him. He quickly prepared more offering and went to the Buddha's abode to reverently pay his respect. He sincerely repented his behavior towards Sariputta. Therefore, the Buddha carefully explained the 5 precepts and the 10 good deeds to this Brahmin. The Brahmin realized that the Buddha's teachings were unrivaled, and asked to take refuge with him. So this is a beautiful story. Yeah? Yeah. So the happy ending was the Brahmin realized that the Buddha's teaching was unrivaled. And asked to take refuge with him. That's how you can change a person. That's why when you have the wisdom, like Sariputta, don't feel offended when insult and all those things. And yet he can act. This is what we call the understanding of an enlightened being. an enlightened being that have the understanding and the virtue. Mm. And they can actually help people through all this. It's not to get angry, become like affected by what people do. What people do may be insulting or very negative in this approach. But when they have the Dhamma, they will know the world is the world. People are just the way they are. Conditioned like that, things be like that. So you have to be at peace. Then if you reflect back, you will also come to know this could be karmic. In the past, you could have done certain things to people, maybe worse than this. So you reap what you sow. There is no such thing as fair or unfair, right or wrong. Nature is just nature. That is the law. The nature's law. Law of karma that governs life and existence. So when we understand that, we can come to terms with all this reality. No matter what happens, we need to develop the understanding to come to terms with the reality and be at peace with it and move on. Then we can have clarity of mind to act, to resolve issue or things or situation amicably so that it will not have any negativity of mind state. Okay, we will read on. Actually, before Sariputta took refuge with the Buddha, he had been very arrogant because he knew that he had great wisdom. After he entered the Sangha as the Buddha's disciple through mastering the precept and cultivating patience, he learned to tame his arrogant mind, his arrogance, and develop impartial wisdom. This is how he was later able to teach the Brahmin elders and help others to develop the will to uphold precepts. So if we are always mindful, we can learn the Buddha Dharma from everyone around us, as the ability to give and to uphold precept is part of everyone's inner wisdom. So this example that the author has given is very beautiful, very touching. So as a cultivator, we should actually develop some understanding, then we can actually turn things around. And through what you do, your action, it can be reflected. Then even arrogant people will feel strange and they will look at you differently. How can this person take all this type of insult and yet so sincerely wish him good and give him the blessing? Because he himself is so arrogant, if people do this to him, he will never forget and never forgive. But this particular monk that he did to was so different. That's why they can see the difference in you. And on many occasions in my life, I also encountered this type of thing. Because the way I respond was different. I remember there were a few incidents. Some youth, they bang into me. Then, of course, they apologize. They say, sorry, uncle. I say, sorry first. Because normally, my reaction is, if whatever happened, I will apologize first. Then he looked at me, you know, then he told his friend. He said, uncle, very strange. Instead, I should be the one saying sorry, but he says sorry to me. That's why he feels very like touched. Then he smiled back to me and really came forward and apologized. I said, don't worry, Tada Appa, because he didn't really hurt me much. He just banged into me. I don't think he did it on purpose. I know it was an accident. But he was in a rush, I can see. And he was in a shopping mall. And there were quite an incident actually, but it was beautiful. So sometimes while doing certain things, people can never understand how come this person can be like that. Normally you have reacted in another state, but most of the time you are calm, you have your understanding, then you come down, you didn't react, then you just look at the situation. Even car accident was the same. Then we just resolve it amicably. Then I say it's okay, small thing, I will get it sorted out. Then I only advise that maybe person or what, next time when you try, be careful. So if you are not careful, you can also lead to accident and harm yourself too. So all these are lessons learned from life. So this adaptive verse is quite interesting. The Buddha taught the Dhamma in this world, so we could take joy in good deeds, practice giving, and uphold precepts. He taught that we all equally possess intrinsic wisdom, that tranquil, clear, pure, perfect, and wondrous state. When our vows are vast and our mind are spacious, we feel happiness, delight, and Dhamma joy. And this is really beautiful. Thus, we reach a state of upholding precepts, samadhi, and wisdom, means the cultivation of sila, samadhi, and panya, and liberated understanding and views. This is the cultivator's virtue. As a cultivator, when you have done it successfully, you can have all this that is described under this adaptive verse. So you go back and read it out so that the next session can be more interesting. Why the Buddha taught the Dhamma in this world, and all this. Okay, so now we will open up for meditation reporting. So how are you getting?
Oh, I'm fine. Very good now.
Okay. Yeah, your mom?
Oh, my mom is also good.
Oh, so you recovered,
yeah. Recovered already. And every one of us has taken our second jab, my brother today.
Sadhu. Very good. That is good news.
So maybe I comment on today's sharing on the
good
story on Sariputta.
Yeah.
I think I can understand better when Brother Dio went through it just now.
I
think if I were to listen to it a few years ago, I would just
You cannot accept what happened, and you cannot understand what was the intent behind and what transpired. Yeah, it's very weird.
Not only that, I would just listen to it like just a story. I would not understand the significance of it. But now I know that, you know, that is the aim that, you know, we want to cultivate until we reach that kind of state.
You can have that kind of empathy, wisdom, and understanding to turn situation around to help people, because Sariputta's intention was very good and he is the foremost in wisdom. So when he heard the people talking about this Brahmin who is very arrogant and also lack of generosity and all these things, he already make up his mind to see how he can help this person. That's why he went and approached him, and he patiently waited. Then he also didn't expect this Brahmin will go and do all these things. The dirty water after washing his hand, his mouth, and then he poured into Sariputta's butt. But the Sariputta is at least the beginning of a wholesome action. at least he poured into his bath, although it's dirty water and all those things. But what is important is that action, Sariputta know how to make use of that merit on his behalf and help him to develop the wholesomeness. That's why he go back, he add sand, he add mud and all that. Then go and patch up the pathway where the Buddha used to walk. So at least there is a contribution of what he has offered. It may not be alms in that sense, but it's the beginning. And because he didn't react to the insult and other things, so this Brahmin also not stupid. He realized, hey, how come this monk so different? Normal monk would have been affected. Even he himself, he will feel he will be affected if people do that to him. That's why this story is very good. And that give rise to condition for him to ask his worker or servant to go after Sariputta, but Sariputta purposely walk fast so that they can't get him, and he go and do all those things. Then when the servants arrive, they heard the conversation between what Sariputta did and the Buddha. Then only they understand everything Sariputta did as a monk is selfless to help the Brahmin, the master, the servant's master. That's why then they went back and reported that good part of the story. The Brahmin was so like happy and pleased, and yet he felt bad because he wants to apologize. That's why he made the decision to ask his people to prepare food offering and when they make offering to the Buddha. And Sariputta did all. Then during that time, the Buddha knew there were conditions. That's why the Buddha taught him the precepts, taught him the 10 good deeds, the 5 precepts, the 10 meritorious deeds, or good deeds, or meritorious action. Then only the Brahmin realized how beautiful that teaching is. Yeah, when the Buddha explained the precept, he explained the understanding behind. So all these are very beautiful. That's why finally the Brahmin also took refuge, renewed the precept, then cultivate. Then after that, he was able to go and teach the other Brahmins. So all these are very wholesome. Yeah, you continue, Manyan, yes.
Radio, actually, few days back, also, I did think of it. I was thinking maybe ask Radio to explain to us, not that I don't know, but maybe more detail the Noble Eightfold Path.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah, because yeah. I think I just want to know more details so that I can practice it, because I think that is the start, that is an important
very important starting point and understanding, because cultivation evolve around the Noble Eightfold Path. Where this Noble Eightfold Path is like the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And this is basically the advice of the Buddha. So when you have the embodiment of his teaching, you will have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path factors. So your question is very good, started here. Maybe I will make use of this condition to share a bit first, because it's a very wide topic. You cannot cover it within 1 hour or two. But I will give you a generalized understanding so that cultivator of the way can develop this understanding. You see, the Buddha, when he taught the Four Noble Truths, he actually explained the Four Noble Truths, which are true that can make the individual enlightened or noble ones. So they have the first noble truth of dukkha, the reality of life and existence, so that you understand life, especially the mundane aspect of life. So this noble truth of dukkha, the prevalence of suffering, is very important. It's like you understand life. Then after that, the second noble truth explains the cause behind all this suffering. The eight realities, how when you deludedly grasp, cling and attach to the five aggregate of form and mind, it will condition suffering or misery or affliction. The second noble truth is the noble truth of cause of arising of suffering. He said the cause is mainly sakkayaditi, self-delusion, that condition you to deludedly grasp and cling onto the five aggregates of form and mind, the two aspects as the me and the I. That is self-delusion. And that is also the final summary of the first noble truth. After you have understood this first two noble truths, you would have developed some form of understanding of life, and you can actually manage your life better. That when you understand what is suffering and the cause behind suffering, you can manage your life better. Then he didn't stop there. He said after that, you need to know the third noble truth. And the third noble truth is very beautiful. He said suffering may not be. Even we have this prevalence of suffering, the reality of life and existence, the eight conditions where you are told birth, old age, sickness and death, when you don't understand them, when you confront them without Dhamma, without proper Dhamma understanding, suffering will be the result. When you attach, you will cling, you will grasp. Then when there is separation from your loved ones, prized possession, your wealth, whatever you hold on to or cling on to tightly. So all this also conditions suffering. And separation can occur in many ways. Through death, through accident, through calamity, separation can occur. Then through relationship failure, divorce and other things also, separation can occur. Then through forced separation during crisis time or during the financial situation, you are being separated from your children, your siblings. And there are also many other reasons for separation. Sometimes war, calamity and all those things can also lead to separation. Then when you cannot get what you want in life, you also develop suffering, unhappiness. When things don't go your way, when you are with people whom you don't like, it can also give rise to suffering. Then the final summary, of course, when we deludedly grasp and cling to the fiery of form and mind, suffering will occur, where this is delusion, ignorance. The Buddha said all this may not be, may suffering may not be when you understand them. Then you know the cause, you can mitigate it, you can transcend it, you can go above it. So this third noble truth is very important, is that suffering need not be. Enlightenment in the here and the now can be realized, leading to wisdom that enable you to liberate your mind and free your mind from all this suffering. So this is like the light at the end of the tunnel. You see hope. Then you realize life can be very beautiful when I understand this teaching, because suffering need not be. I can live the noble life, the beautiful life of enlightened being. So that was a very assuring thing, rewarding thing. Then after that, the Buddha didn't stop. He said, he not only promised you that suffering may not be enlightenment in the here and now is possible, but under the fourth noble truth, he explained clearly. He said, if you cultivate this noble equal path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, it will lead to the enlightenment in the here and now. So basically, from this fourth noble truth, we can deduce that this is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. When you cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. It will liberate your mind. It will bring about enlightenment in the here and now. So this is most beautiful. But like Man Yuan's question said, she knew. She asked this question because she wants to ask on behalf of other cultivators, and especially Kayamitas, and at the same time for her to develop deeper understanding. Just by now, I think after hearing so many sessions of sharing, you all would have known that this Noble Eightfold Path cultivation is very extensive. So like I explained before, this Noble Eightfold Path is basically the advice of the Buddha. The Buddha in his teaching break it down into Sila, Samadhi and Panya. Sila is morality. Samadhi is the training of the mind to have mindfulness and Samadhi. Then with that training, with that realization of the true mind in Samadhi, you can see things as they are to awaken. That's why wisdom will arise. So to be an enlightened being, you must have the embodiment of this Noble Eightfold Path factor. And to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, you need to go through the training, the cultivation, and the teaching. And the approach can be approached from many directions. But basically, like how the Buddha has arranged them, the Noble Eightfold Path in that order that he has arranged them is the most appropriate way to start. But very few people understand how to start. And most people, I think, they thought the Noble Eightfold Path is not one teaching. They go and break it up into 8 teachings. And they try to cultivate each and every of these path factor. But it's actually one teaching. That's why the Mahjong analogy that I give, 九字连环, if you have the Mahjong, those who know Mahjong, they will understand. It's either Sok Chi, Tong Chi, or Man Chi, it's the same. When you have the 111, 999, 6 cards already, right? Then in between 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. 6 plus 7, 13 cards. Do you know what you call? You call all the 9 cards, 1 to 9. Any card come out, you can game. That's why it's called 九字连环. Means this Noble Eightfold Path, after you cultivate, it can solve all your problems. Any card come out, you can gain. You can realize the enlightenment. That's why it's one teaching. It's called a Noble Eightfold Path. So how do we start cultivating this? A lot of people don't have the inking or understanding. Like the Buddha said, you have to start with right view or right understanding. So right view and right understanding is seldom understood. Right view with regards to what? Right understanding with regards to what? So we have to know the five panchaniyamas in order to arrive at that right view. That you read the sutta, it's mentioned very clearly. The three basic right view that the Buddha taught are the spiritual aspect of the five panchaniyama. The first is law of karma. Second is law of mind, means karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama. But all this, before you start the cultivation, what you have is just knowledge, like karma niyama. After hearing what I have shared with you, and you develop the understanding that this law of karma is very powerful, like what the Buddha described, that's how his advice come about. When you understand the law of karma, you want to take care of karma. To take care of karma, you have to follow the advice of the Buddha. Avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind. And how to avoid all evil? Keep the precepts. Then cultivate wholesomeness. Wholesomeness is part and parcel of right view leading to all the right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and noble eightfold perfectness. Then purify the mind is right mindfulness and right samadhi. So noble eightfold path is actually the advice of the Buddha. It's sila, samadhi, and panya. When you cultivate them and you have the embodiment of them, you are incapable of evil. But to understand all this, to cultivate all this, is not just a linear progression of knowledge, then go and do it accordingly. No, because it is one path and they are all connected. So because they are all connected, this right view that you start off with is initially what we call pariyatti. Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching. So initially, you have to arise the understanding through thought base, means through knowledge. Then when you understand them, the Buddha say, the second phase of Dhamma is to put it into practice, to cultivate it. So how can you cultivate this right view? With regards to law of karma, with regards to the other law, law of mind and law of truth, which is Dhamma Niyama. And this topic is very wide in the sense that even the law of karma, we know the theory is simple. The learning of the theory, the knowledge aspect is simple. Maybe most of you all can memorize it and remember it. But how to put it into practice? How do you cultivate right view with regards to law of karma? This, you have to do all those things that the Buddha advised you. How do you avoid all evil? Keep the precept. Then you have to go into the reflection, contemplation, inquiry. What constitutes precept? Why keep precepts? Precepts consist of major evil. You can reflect, contemplate, and trace. Who are the people who break or violate all these precepts? They are evil people with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why they consist major evil. If you violate them, you commit heavy karmic negativity. You have a lot of evil roots. And this is the cause of negativity of karma, downfall in the human karmic nature. So when you understand this, you determine to cultivate this, to avoid all evil, itself is a very big part. The five precepts, you have to go through, understand them. Then when you start to develop the understanding, you have to understand what constitutes evil. Otherwise, you cannot do anything with the precepts. Means the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, you have to expand on it, then go deep into it, Then you have to develop the training of the mind to be mindful, to be aware, so that you are sensitive, so that you can be aware of the evils. You can be aware of your stirring of your mind with the intention, the mental intention that has the evil root behind, the conditioned negativity of karma. That's how people break their precept. They become arrogant. They become foolish, heedless. So to be a cultivator is not that simple. You need to train your mind to be ever mindful, heedful, constantly meditating. So all this understanding has to follow. So reflection, contemplation, second turning, then you move on to the cultivation, which is the third turning. Then after you have started developing the cultivation, you start to be aware of what constitutes evil, the three evil roots, and you are mindful of them. Then you have to move on to the cultivation of the other right view and right understanding, means the law of mind and law of Dhamma. But before you do that, the first one you have to continue. From that right view regards the law of karma, you know what constitutes evil and you want to cultivate. So what must you do? You train your mind to have mindfulness, awareness, to see all this. Then you have to learn the five ways to abandon the wrong thought, the unwholesome thought. Then the four right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought or wrong action and wrong speech that has arisen. Then the right effort to prevent them from arising. That one need wisdom, need understanding, need yonisomanasika. So all this I have already explained. So the whole cultivation is actually a big wide topic. Then after you have done that, then only we can talk about the meditative aspect. After you have avoided all evil, do good, then the meditative aspect is awareness, sati, leading to heedfulness, the silent mind, the awareness nature within the true mind. So you have to realize that you have to silence and develop the daily mindfulness, the daily religious routine. So all this come into play. Then even to cultivate right thought, you have to reflect, contemplate what constitutes right thought. Then you have to understand, more important is what constitutes wrong thought. Thought that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, the evil roots. So that you recognize them. So that you know, like what I always advise, whenever there is this, what they call lack of peace, whenever you are unhappy and not peaceful, the evil roots are there, the wrong thoughts are there, the negativity of karma, wrong view, wrong thought, they are all there. Then what constitutes right thought, wholesomeness, all of your virtue, your whatever goodness, kindness, gentleness, pleasantness, they are right thought. And you have to learn to arise them. Then later on, the fourth right effort to refine upon them and perfect them. And it ties in with the three set of pure precepts. That's why this whole training itself is very comprehensive. Then you have to repeat for the law of mind, which is the 12 link paticca samuppada. That one is even more difficult. That one, your mindfulness has to be very stable. Your awareness has to be very stable. Your daily mindfulness has to be very stable. Your contemplative wisdom, second turning wisdom, has to be very stable. Then your third turning wisdom must slowly, slowly awaken before you can really see the dwelling, the paticca samuppada. Then to silence your mind, to insight into phenomena, to awaken to the three universal characteristics. That itself is also a very extensive training, cultivation, and very wide topic. So all these are related. Then finally, of course, Dhamma Niyama. This one is involving the four foundations of mindfulness, Dhammanupassana. Then they are all there. That's why the whole cultivation involves the cultivating of the Noble Eightfold Path factor. Not only right view, after that right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the way you live your life and train yourself to the four right effort. Then after that is of course the right mindfulness. That one is meditative. Meditation itself involves the four foundation of mindfulness, the daily mindfulness, sati, sambhajana, everything. Following the 10 steps of the Avijja Sutta, they are all connected and linked. Then sama sati and sama samadhi is a very extensive topic. This one also you have to go and do it. The four foundation of mindfulness. Then the importance of this mindfulness as the enlightenment factor. Then the three turnings of the four noble truth, you also have to go into it. Then what is samadhi and how you develop samadhi? It must be a free mind. It must not be a conditioned mind. You must not go into concentration, absorption, focusing and all that thing. Otherwise, there is a conditioned mind, conditioned state. It's not a free mind. That is not your true mind. Your awareness nature, your true nature. Without that one, the self nature, you cannot understand truth, you cannot meditate, you cannot awaken, you cannot insight into phenomena. So all these are a very, very extensive scope and field of cultivation. So hopefully with this summary, you know how to go about doing it. But with patience, with faith, sincerity, it can be done. It's not difficult. And in fact, there are quite a lot of Kayamita who has moved into it, except it takes a long time. It's not so fast. To have the embodiment of Noble Eightfold Path is not so easy. It goes hand in hand with the cultivation. As you cultivate, as you transform, you will find more things in the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Just to have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path, you must be very stable in all aspects of your training, especially the five spiritual faculties. They must stabilize until they become balanced. Then you stand as fast. Then your sati spiritual faculty already stable, your meditation already stable. Now once your spiritual faculty is very stable, well developed, your meditative mind is always with you. You are always in the meditative state. Then cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path smoothen. You can do it without much effort. It's like very natural, very simple. Then you can really do it. But take a lot of time. You have to be very patient. Then you have to go into life. You have to go into all the Bodhisattva way to cultivate extensively for a long period of time to develop the understanding, the wisdom. Then ultimately, when you have all the perfection, the parami and the understanding, then only you can fully grasp the full cultivation of this Noble Eightfold Path. And this Noble Eightfold Path is the answer to all things. It's the path that leads to the end of all suffering. It's the embodiment of the Buddha's teaching, the advice, sila, samadhi, and panya. It's incapable of negativity. And it's so beautiful. So hopefully with this, Manya, you can develop the understanding. Okay? Today on the summary is very good. You all should listen to it. Okay, back to you, Manya.
Yeah. Radio, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It is really good. Just now how Radio explained the linkage.
Yeah, all the
Actually, I asked this question also because I have been feeling much better. I think I only managed to, you know, what Brother Teo said just now, I just managed to touch it a bit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
yet, I could feel much, much better now.
Yeah,
because,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very funny.
Yeah.
Just a bit. I don't think
No,
I even
because
have
you
5%.
can now appreciate, more important is appreciate the teaching. Then
yeah.
you can understand that this teaching is so beautiful and you can slowly, slowly go into it because now you can understand. In the past, you completely blur. I use the word blur, it's just you cannot follow, understand what is all this. Your views, your opinion, your conditioning were there. But now you are ready to listen attentively and to appreciate that time of sharing. And you know it's so beautiful because without understanding you can never express it so beautifully. And this teaching is really, really beautiful. So sorry to you, Manyan, for bringing out the appropriate, right, beautiful condition for my nature to share. And this one I have been trying to explain many times already. But tonight is very good because of your question. I summarize it very clearly, all the linkage. So you go back and listen, you will be very beautiful. Like last Sunday sharing, I think after that one of the Kayamita went back and listened to it many, many times. And she had so much joy. Then she wrote to me. So my nature rejoiced to her too. And she thanked me. And I said, you should also thank your good past and your good karma and your good affinity. Otherwise, all these things cannot happen. That's why those who listen attentively many, many times, the Dhamma, the message really come out and shine forth. So you all also can go back and listen to this again. And for that, you should thank Brother Jin Hao, my daughter, they all for doing all this recording and what they call putting into our My Kayamita website and also the Dhamma website, RedTeo.com, so that it's available for cultivator to listen, to develop the understanding. So all these are very beautiful. Sadhu to you, Manyan. Yeah, you can continue.
The other thing is, Pratio did say that confidence is very important, the Sada there.
Sada, faith, confidence, very important. Where without this, you can never go into it. Where you have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, in your teacher, in the words that your guide or teacher who have the understanding share with you, your faith becomes extremely different. And that faith would drive you. And then when you listen with the faith, I'm very strange. You know, the Dhamma appeal. I remember in the early days when I encountered certain teachers and guides, I listened attentively to their sharing. I did the recording myself and I listened every time when I'm free while driving most of the time and sometimes at home. And I listened. Even to Master Shen Hua or other things. And when I listen with the faith, my understanding is there that I can catch all the important points, the understanding, also because of my past. So now, a lot of Kayamita has developed the ability to develop the training and the understanding to receive all this truth. But over the years, a lot of things happen. Kayamita may not know, but there are some who know. Then now you reflect back, like you mentioned just now earlier, that many years back, you cannot appreciate the sharing of Sariputta, the charity and all those things that help the Brahmin. But now it's different. You can appreciate. And all this is possible because of the years of training, cultivation, understanding, and your faith has developed. And you have changed a lot, Manyan, since the early day when you started your cultivation. You were so conditioned and your habitual tendency is so strong. You were very rigid with your view and opinion thing at that time. But now you are so different. You can have joy. You can understand. And many things has become different. And for you to pull through your earlier situation where you and your mom, they all fall into, it's not easy for you. But you did it. And my nature rejoiced. And like you said, now you are already recovered, your mom also, and all of you have your second jab already. Turn out you are faster than me and my wife and my daughter. We haven't had our second jab. I think we have to wait till next week.
Yours is
Sinovac.
Pfizer.
Pfizer faster also.
Pfizer
is the most expensive one. And also supposed to be the best and most recognized one. With Pfizer, you can fly anywhere. That certificate is digital certificate is very, very popular and very very recognized by most countries. Very good, Sadhu to you. Anything else, Maya?
Maybe I quickly share something else, but I do not know whether it has any linkage to Dharma or whatever.
No problem. You just share what you want. It should be beautiful. Yeah.
This one was a few years ago before the pandemic, like maybe 3 years, I cannot remember. Actually, yeah. Went for team building. I went to team building with the office. This team building, suddenly they have this activity. We have to go for those rough water roughing.
I really remember
that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So my daughter used to go for all those things.
I think your daughter very sporty person, so I think she will not have any problem. It wasn't informed to us up front, you know. So I think everyone, all of them, those who cannot swim, most of us are 90%.
There is fear, definitely.
Then we have our life jacket on, we are supposed to go very fast over the rocks, and we may also be get thrown off into the water, you know.
There is a canoe.
So the water is very
fast moving.
The way they describe it just before we get into the water, how come they want us to die?
I didn't know nowadays the Bank Negara also have such activity, which is very good. Last time my daughter used to tell me their office got a lot of this team building thing, a lot of this event. It's more adventurous.
The bank have this like every 2 years we will go and do something like that.
Wow, very good. Adventurous. Yeah.
So I have more confidence because in my boat, my raft, right, there is two person, both my boss, one deputy director, the other one is a director. And they are quite strong and they are involved in sports.
No wonder. So you are more protected also.
And I know that, you know, at least one of them, my immediate boss, would look out for me if anything happened. So I had that confidence in me, but then at the same time also still afraid because don't know how to swim.
Correct. But you had the life jacket, that conservation thing.
Life jacket.
To save you with the life jacket easy, your immediate boss can do it.
So of course, all the raft there is also a guide.
Oh, definitely, they have to, otherwise it's dangerous.
So we set out, like, I think there is seven spots where it will be very rough, and they told us already. So the second last, in the beginning we were afraid, but after a few spots, it was like, wow, very nice.
Yeah, you enjoy
we
it.
Start to enjoy
the,
it.
There the fun, everything is there. When you become part of it, there is so much joy. I remember during the Vasti day, we also had a lot of this very interesting activity, fun thing. In life, it's like that. When there's condition for you to be adventurous and do all those things, you must do it. Otherwise, after that, no more. Right really. Like now, at my age, how to be adventurous? Maybe the Dhamma way. So like in the early years, I remember my children like all the rites, the Disneyland rites and all things. They're very like adventurous type of like. For me, that time I already, I think 40 plus. How to go and join them? I am my wife. I said, you all go. So we try a few, but to me, I don't have the interest. But I can feel the joy. I can feel the joy. I can feel how people go through it with all the joy and all those things. Especially that time, my two kids, they really love it. I don't know if they have fear or they enjoy, but I can see the joy in them. They line up and wait for the ride. And they can even tell me, wow, this one is very interesting, you know, this thing. Yeah, it's very beautiful. So it end up well, huh? You develop the joy.
Not yet, haven't, because I think it was the roughest point. The rough hit a rock, and then I fell, you know, I fell into the water.
You fell into the stream.
But then because I have that corona, I just relaxed, you know.
Life jacket. Very good. That is the best advice. Relax and let it flow. Record and flow. That's very good.
Yeah, correct. Doing that, maybe because I had that confidence that they will save me.
Yeah.
So I was in the water for, I don't know how long, but it wasn't long. I was really relaxed, not struggling at all, very quiet.
Very good. Sadhu.
Then I felt someone pulling me from the back, you know.
But he
didn't pull first. He pushed me into the water, and then he released, when he released, the water pressure pushed me up by itself.
He
doesn't
correct.
Need to use...
correct. Doesn't need to use
so he knew the technique.
Because
he knew the technique.
That is buoyancy. When he pulled you down, that buoyancy force take a while to develop. That when he released, the buoyancy force come out, then you spring out, then very easy to take you out.
Yes, I spring out, but when he pushed me down also, I wasn't panicking.
Because you are relaxed. You understand what is relaxed. That helps a lot. That's why a relaxed mind is a very calm mind. It's a meditative mind. You just let things be, accord and flow, and everything will just happen beautifully. Like today's talk, I think my daughter sent out one. Not just sent out. Okay. When she sent out, you will know. The message is the same. I changed the title of it. Very good, that one. Maybe I read the title to you. It's useful. So that when my daughter share, you can pay attention. My daughter will send it out after. Okay. I changed the title to Accord and Flow with the Condition. At peace with all things, then everything will fall into place and unfold beautifully. You add in the word will fall into place and unfold beautifully. Okay, Maya, you continue. Beautiful, Father, rejoice.
So when I spring up the water, actually my immediate boss was the one. He pulled me out and then he let go of me and I landed on my director. I landed on it. Oh, I think the rest was laughing already. Still, I was relaxed, you know, I wasn't like scrambling. And I could hear him saying, it's okay, take your time to get up. And I really took my time to get up. After that, when I got up, because there's still another station, I just sit back onto the seat where I was supposed to sit. Like nothing happened, you know. They were all staring at me. Then after that, finished already, then we went for lunch. That means we went back on dry land. When I go into the dining hall, then some of them were saying, you know, just now, we were horrified when you went into the water. They said, I wasn't moving at all. Like, just like that. They thought something happened. Maybe I hit myself against some rock and then maybe I was hurt.
That is your imagination.
But I listened to what how they perceive me.
Expression or how they perceive you. Yeah, correct. Yes.
Yeah. So you see that after that, when they pull me out and then I just sit down like nothing happened.
That's why they cannot understand. They cannot understand. For you to have this ability is because you have the Dhamma. You will meditate before. You know how to relax. And that's why when the time comes, all this simultaneously or spontaneously, it happens. Without you using your thought, try to recall what Bharati was saying. No, it happened by itself. Do you realize that? That is what the real understanding is. When the time comes, the understanding by itself spontaneously surfaces, and you can do it because you have transformed, you have changed. You have changed, like I said, you have changed a lot. In the early days, you can't, you would have panic and all those things. So this is a good, very good sharing. This is in fact a very good encounter to let you understand what Dhamma is. What this cultivation is, even the ability to understand, relax, silence your mind, echo and flow, and let things be, and have faith in your immediate boss, your director, and all those colleagues and friends. And this is what life is all about. When there is Dhamma, there is understanding, and there is understanding, everything go your way, like the talk that my daughter is going to send out. So it's very beautiful. What's sadhu to you, Manyan? Anything else?
Nothing. Actually, I don't know what happened also that event 3 years ago. But then really, I don't know, like this kind of incident come up in my mind. Not only this other incident that I last time experienced, I find weird that I cannot explain. I kind of like,
You know why or not? Because when you cultivate, your brain transforms, change. Then all this memory is for you to understand, to develop the understanding. Sometimes it may happen even in your deep sleep, dream, like that surface, release out. It's for you to understand, to see the difference then and now. A lot of these things is very beautiful. That's why you are smart to witness them. And sometimes it's the nature's way to show you what meditation is all about, what the spiritual understanding is all about. And all this can happen. Even Sri An also got his story in the early days. He told me the waterfall incident and all those things. Miraculously, somebody saved him and all those things. It's like there's a hand behind all those things. Then I got one classmate who walked the Great Wall when he fell from that height. Because the friend that together with him thought finished already, because that slope was so deep. Then according to his experience, he came back, he reported it's very strange. So every time before he go, he asked me to send metta and chant protection and blessing for you. And I say, you don't worry, you go. Then he told me, when he felt there was something like holding on to him. There's a force, like a hand like that. Then he landed on a branch, you know, a tree branch at the cliff there. Then that tree branch, like a nest, helped him. Then he didn't fell off the cliff to the deep ravine. And he was able to find his way back to the top. Then he continued his journey. Then when the colleague saw him, hey, you're still around. He said, I already give out. I want to call rescue people to go and look for you. Then he realized he came out. Then he came back, he shared with me. A lot of strange things happened. But for your case, it's even more amazing because you know how to apply, relax, and all that thing. And your faith, like what you say too, faith is very important. Oh, sadhu to you, Manjan. Anything else?
No more, really, Bharati.
Thank you. So let us rejoice. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.